handle the truth.
The Denise Simon Experience. The Truth Matrix. Vetting, exposing, drilling down to the truth.
Rolling Thunder, this is Hitman, see ya out. Hitman, this is Rolling Thunder, see ya out.
The Denise Simon Experience. Exposing politics, lies, demagoguery, spin, fraud.
Francis Press, Mike Charlie, 435-921. Good to Mark. Mike Charlie, 473-989er. Out.
Promoting individual situational awareness. Question. Probe. Notice. Ask why.
Mark Smoke on the deck. Two rounds AGBT. Cast TOT 53.
And now, the Denise Simon Experience.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Denise Simon Experience, and a big shout out to WDDQ Talk 92.1, who continues to be so generous with their airtime. I've got the pleasure of introducing to you Jeffrey Katz. Jeffrey has been kind enough to carve out some time to be with us to tell us about his book, Rules to Live By, A Guide to a Wonderful Life. And I would argue that... We certainly need that, because I think almost every day, Mr. Jeffrey, that we're kind of a country in despair. So congratulations on the book, and thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great to be here with you, Denise. So, yeah, this book, Rules to Live By, Maimonides' Guide to a Wonderful Life. Maimonides lived about 800 years ago, but his wisdom, I kind of stumbled onto his teachings when I was a teenager, and I was kind of hooked ever since, because the profound practical wisdom that he brings to bear in so many different areas of life is really breathtaking. And it turned my own life around, and I wanted to share it with other people. You know, Maimonides himself said that if he didn't put this stuff down in writing and pass it on before he died, he felt that he would be like denying people their rightful inheritance to be happy and be successful. So I'd like to think I'm playing a little bit of a role in that. So, you know, just to give people a little bit of a background on Maimonides, I mean, he lived 800 years ago, but the truth is his teachings are very much alive. I mean, in all Jewish schools, Maimonides is studied profusely. In major universities, like everyone, the philosophy department still grapple with all of his important ideas that Aquinas really took on also. But basically, Maimonides was a giant in two different areas. One, he was the top doctor of his time. He was basically the court doctor, the top doctor to the king in Egypt, who at that time was the Sultan in Cairo. And he was also, so he was a great man of science and the greatest doctor of his age, but he was also the top spiritualist and philosopher, theologian. He was a man of great spirituality and taught us how to connect to God. And he was really known equally in both of those spheres. So it's really because he had his feet. So he was such an expert in kind of both worlds. And he had so much common sense and wisdom that his view basically was to share some basic ideas that one could follow in all the main areas of life. How to develop your character, career, health, family life, spirituality, your legacy, your attitude in life. And by keeping our eye on each of these balls and just following a few basic rules, he felt that we could really achieve happiness in each of these areas and fulfillment and just lead up, you know, overall just a wonderful life, which it really is a great key to.
You know, it's curious. For years, people have sought mentors, whether they seek mentors in their business life or their personal life. There was a trend out in California where people were literally hiring life coaches. And there are those people that go to church or synagogue, you know, that just kind of stay centered. And so what that is really telling us is that we often need to be reminded to stay as close to that center line as we possibly can. I had mm-hmm. I had a great aunt who died at 104. And this was years ago. I think she was born about the time Abraham Lincoln was, but around. I often said to her, you know, what is the secret to a long life? And she said, live in moderation. My sense is that dealt with pretty much everything, you know, moderation with how you communicate with people, your friendships, how you deal with your finances, where you live, what you do every day, and your health. And I think that's really part and parcel of Rules to Live By, A Guide to a Wonderful Life. Yes?
It is. There's no question about it. You really hit on a great key, Denise, there. Balance for Maimonides mm-hmm. is really a great key to everything. I mean, for example, in developing your character, you should try to associate with virtuous and wise people. You know, that kind of sounds pretty basic and pretty obvious, but by associating with people whom you kind of like aspire to be like, that, you know, things kind of will rub off naturally yes. on you to some degree. And, you know, one of the great tricks is, as you like, character development is very, very important for Maimonides. For example, you know, Maimonides had an expression that the risk of a wrong decision is preferable to the terror of indecision. So he wanted people to kind of train themselves to get comfortable making decisions, because people who can't make basic decisions for themselves or their family, they often can't really make progress in any of the main areas of life because they're kind of like frozen. And he understands that we're human and not all decisions are going to be correct, but it doesn't matter. As long as we get comfortable making decisions and, you know, we use good judgment in making those decisions, that's a tremendously valuable asset. When you combine that with a few other just basic elements, for example, another expression Maimonides liked to use was lose with truth and right rather than gain with falsehood and wrong. In other words, develop a trustworthy character. Be the kind of person, like, you know, if somebody fools you or tricks you, maybe they'll gain something short term, they'll gain a little money once or twice, but is that really going to hold them in good
standing? There's always going to be a dark shadow with it following them, yes.
Yeah, exactly. People like, not only personally, but professionally and in every other way, people like dealing with people who are trustworthy people, who they can trust. And when you add to those qualities, like reliability, like be a person, if you say you're going to do something, do it. Like if you say next week I'll have done this, just make sure you do it. Because if you combine those basic qualities of character, reliability, you know, your word is your bond, trustworthiness, you're never going to trick people and you're transparent, and someone who's comfortable making decisions. I mean, yeah, such a person is so rare that, like, if nothing else, your career is going to skyrocket in any organization you're in, because once you have those basic qualities, you're reliable, you're trustworthy, you know how to make decisions, you already stand, they're such basic qualities, but you already have made yourself stand out head and shoulders above, you know, almost basically everybody else. So your career is going to skyrocket, your family life is going to be improved, and it's going to be something that really positively affects everything in your life. So it's principles like that. And again, they seem easy, but it's really in the application. It's really knowing what these basic principles are, these rules, and just applying them consistently in one's life. They can really be profound and transformative, as I can attest to personally.
Jeffrey, there's freedom in, and which gives happiness, but there's freedom in a mental emotions, because you are kind of toeing the line. You're doing everything really as close to right as you possibly can. And it's freedom from worry and it's freedom from fear. So if you stay centered, whatever that may be, that into itself eliminates a lot of uncertainties. Did I say some of that right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's a very important principle. In other words, in the development of your character, of anyone's character, trying to, you know, really open up life and giving control of your emotional and mental life back to yourself, it's very important basically to focus on the positive. People have to give up. Maimonides counsels so strongly for give up the gossip, give up speaking badly about other people, give up the envy, give up the grudges that you hold against, that anyone may hold against other people. Because, you know, so people can lead their lives completely in a reactive mode. All day, I'm reacting to emails I get, I'm reacting to texts I get, I'm reacting, you know, someone walks down the street and looks at me the wrong way, I have to react to that. All of your, if you live your life that way, just reacting to things that happen to you, it sucks all of your mental or an emotional energy away. There's nothing left. There's nothing left for you to do that's great and positive and that you can be passionate about. All the meaning has been sucked out of your life because you're letting it, if you let it be reactive like that.
Yeah. So I think the word maybe that best describes it is grace, right?
Grace is definitely part of it, that idea. And that's what opens you up to spirituality. You really hit on the key there, because according to Maimonides, once you know, basically the connection to God, and Maimonides says that just like a child, a small child really can never be happy unless he has a strong link with his parents. Mm-hmm. So too, every person can't really be happy, according to Maimonides, unless he has a link with God, a meaningful connection with God. And Maimonides shows us how to do this. It's basically building up through our minds, which are the noblest part of ourselves, as we think correct thoughts about God, we build up a mental bridge or a mental tunnel up to God. And the trick is, Denise, that it's a two-way tunnel. It's a two-way bridge because it's through that same tunnel that you build up to God through thinking about God properly that God then looks down on you and watches you and watches over you. And that's the mechanism for the avenue for divine providence to come into your life. God may implant an idea in your mind to help you get over a challenging situation you're facing. You know, Maimonides talks about the divine overflow, an overflowing abundance of wisdom and guidance and ideas and love that is emanating from God at all times. And the trick is how we can pick it up. How we, it's like a radio, you know, there are radio waves all out there, all over the place, but then it's only a radio that's tuned to the right station that can pick up the information, pick up the channel. So the question is, how do we tune ourselves so that we pick up as much of the divine overflow as possible? And, you know, like a radio, Denise, you one has to clear away the static so that the reception becomes clear. How do we do that? How do we clear the static? We clear the static by clearing away all of the negativity, everything that's blocking us, that's draining our emotional power, all of, again, the envy and the grudges and the gossip and the negativity, all that we have to teach ourselves to put that aside. Once we've put that aside, we become so powerful because there is so much emotional energy and positive power that we can then direct to any great cause, to what we believe in, to our family. We can put our energy there and into our career, in our health, in our spiritual life. There's so much we could do once we get rid of the negativity. And once we get rid of that negativity, we also will receive more of the divine overflow. And when we do that and the reception is clearer for us, we're then going to see signposts on the road for our best life and the directions we should be heading in. They're going to become very often very clear to us, even though before, when we were still trapped in the negativity, we couldn't see it. But once we clear the negativity away, those often become very clear where we should be heading going forward. And that's part of a great life, when you're seeing, you know, future positive directions, things you're excited about. It can be, you know, a value or cause, an idea larger than yourself you get involved in, which will become your legacy. And it all gets caught up. And then you engage with your family in your legacy project, this meaningful cause and charity you get involved in. It just becomes, it's just a win-win across all the different areas of your life. It makes your life that much more meaningful all around.
I don't think people necessarily realize, but they impose self-boundaries in decisions almost by the hour every day of their life. You know, if it's raining out, the boundary is we're not going to go, you know, out and fly kites. And so we've set a boundary. We're not going to go out in bad weather. If, you know, there's an event that's going on, well, where is it? How long is it going to be? How far is it? And how much is it going to cost? Well, I can't really afford that. So it's a self-boundary. I'm not going to do that event. I'll go do something else. So people actually do have boundaries that they put into their little decisions day by day for really self-protection, I would argue. Now, that's not to say not to take certain risks, but you measure those risks to see what the return on and the receivables are of that risk. So I think what you're really saying to us is be a lot more introspective. You know, a boundary is I'm not going to sit and eat pizzas and potato chips all day long. That's not good for my health. You see what I'm saying? So we do have our own boundaries, correct?
Correct. You know, that, and that also leads naturally and reinforces another point of Maimonides, which I focus on a lot in the book, is in that, you know, when you give part in terms of like the risks and rewards, when you don't have to be wealthy to do this. You know, people think if you're rich, you can then become a philanthropist and adopt a charitable mindset. Even if you have no money to spare or almost no money to spare, most people can still devote some of their time and energy to some cause or idea or value that they really care about and that will help other people and that you see is really needed and that you can make a real contribution at. By doing that, you do so much, not only for the cause and the people you're helping, but for yourself. That's just the way the world works. The payback you get is just so
huge.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
I mean, like, first of all, by donating some of your energy and time, the first thing it does, because you don't get paid for that, you develop an emotional detachment from money. And that's like the first thing you need to get wealthy is becoming detached emotionally from money, because, you know, if you're too close to, you can't make good financial decisions if you can't, you know, think, if you're too close to your money. You know, a surgeon will never operate on his own kid because he's just too close to the situation. You have to spend money to make money. So if people are too wrapped up emotionally in their money, they will never be able to make wise financial decisions or spend their money in a smart way. So the first thing it does, it kind of gives you this emotional detachment from money, you know, devoting time and energy on a voluntary basis to a great cause. You know, other things it does, when you get involved in like local projects to help people, first of all, you become like a magnet in your community. Everyone, you know, many people want to join in a worthwhile project. So you become like a magnet and people just want to join up and you become a leader and a magnet. And also, it happens to be that when you're leading some little local charitable project, you just develop a network of contacts with other local leaders. It happens to be that other people you will need to interact with happen to be often the most successful and influential people in your community.
And they're like-minded,
Yeah, so they're like-minded people. So you develop these amazing contacts, this network of contacts, and these people tend to be a lot more affluent and successful than you are very often. So all the business and social and commercial opportunities that come your way, just because you develop these great friendships with, like you say, like-minded people who got friendly doing something on a charitable basis. So there's great feelings. And for young people, you know, think about if you're heading up a little local project to help, you know, serve some underserved need in your community. You usually have to raise a little money. You have to do a project on limited resources. I mean, you think having that budgetary and operational and management experience might be of use to some business there? You can develop the basic business skills you need that any organization, any firm in the country will be dying to have. So it's just such a win-win, and that's the way the world is created. When you devote yourself to a charitable cause, the benefits you get, you don't do it for all the benefits, but that's just the way the world works. The benefits are unbelievable. And also, these projects you can do, you can bring your children or grandchildren, nieces or nephews, or any younger family members, you get them involved. They give you another way of passing your own values onto the next generation in your family, because, you know, if you don't pass your own values on to your children, there are plenty of people waiting in the wings who want to pass their values on to your kids rather than yours.
Well, so, I mean, if you're doing something positive, then, you know, it eliminates a lot of uncertainties, and certainly there's less turmoil. So, again, it comes back to a little bit of emotional freedom, correct?
Correct. Absolutely. And again, like happiness, emotional freedom and happiness, you know, Maimonides teaches that, you know, happiness is a lot like health, you know, and yes. Maimonides was the top doctor. You know, people who are truly healthy are not constantly worrying and focusing on their health. People who are the most healthy tend to be people who are just going about their day, doing things they love and they find meaningful, and they never even think about their health. Those are the people who tend to be the healthiest people. It's the same thing with happiness. You know, people who are constantly focused, am I happy? Am I not happy? How happy I am? Am I? Those people are, you know, usually not going to be very happy people. People who are involved with their family and their careers and are busy with causes larger than themselves, and they're working on their relationships with God, and they're just busy generally doing a lot of things that they love, and there's really just not enough time in the day to do everything that they feel passionately about, those are the people who are happy. In other words, happiness can only be obtained indirectly. You can't pursue it directly. It's a result of all the great things in your life that you're focusing on. When you're focused on the positive and not on the negative, you're dealing with the negative, but your focus and your emotional energy and power is focused on the positive. That's when you realize, hey, I really am. Am I happy? I mean, sure, I'm happy. I never even think about it. I'm just doing all these things all day.
Well,
that I feel,
I mean, you get instant gratification for going out and buying a new pair of shoes that you couldn't afford in the first place, but you're happy to have them. But that gratification lasts about 10 minutes.
Right. Exactly. I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, Maimonides teaches that happiness comes from within.
Yes.
It comes from what you are, not what you own. It's what you have internally, not what, you know, you have in your pockets. And that's, you know, a very basic principle, because, you know, it's not, obviously, you know, happiness and commercial success are one important area, because obviously Maimonides, what, like I said, tells us the keys to success, both materially and spiritually. There just needs to be a balance there. You need to keep, you know, we need to keep our eyes on the ball in each of the major areas of life, and we can do that. And if we just follow these basic rules, you know, we can really do that. And, you know, in the book, I have 7 sections in the book, each one with Maimonides' basic, simple teachings in each of these main areas of life: character, career, health, family life, spirituality, and so forth. And each chapter, Denise, is only a couple of pages long. There's just one idea in each chapter, and it's just laid out very simply that
Jeffrey, we appreciate this. Rules to Live By, Maimonides, A Guide to a Wonderful Life. We appreciate the work, and I think it's kind of like an internal cheat sheet, a guide sheet. So thank you for this and sharing it, and well done. Appreciate the conversation.
Thank you so much, Denise.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's more coming your way on the Denise Simon Experience. Stay with us.
They are our cuddlers and coworkers, purr machines and love bugs, and constant companions. They are our pets, our family, and they make life so much better. When we face unexpected challenges in life, so do our pets. That's why we're on a mission to support people who love their pets and the pets who love their people, ensuring these families stay exactly where they belong, together. And you have something to offer. With an open heart and mind, there is nothing you can't do. There's no gesture too small or too big when it comes to helping. Whether donating a bag of kibble, sharing an Instagram post of a lost cat, or welcoming a foster pet into your home, every bit of kindness counts. You can help keep pets and people together. Visit petsandpeopletogether.org to learn how to be a helper in your community. This has been a public service announcement brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Thanks, ladies and gentlemen, for hanging with us here on the Denise Simon Experience. We're going to talk a little bit about Governor Ron DeSantis and what he did in the state of Florida. But who's going to help us with this is a frequent guest and a brilliant guy, the CEO and founder of Wimkin, the social media site. So who better to ask when it comes to social media and legislation that Governor DeSantis just signed into law. So, Jason, you know, you're such a advocate for all things free speech and so forth, and we appreciate the fact that you keep up so much with all of what is happening, not only around the country, but at the state level when it comes to protections and free speech on social media and the things that are happening. So thank you for that, but welcome back.
Hey, thank you so much. Calling me brilliant, I'll put the check in the mail for you.
Okay, cool. I like it. Some of us live on Social Security.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
The first piece of legislation that came out of the Florida legislature on social media and young kids passed and went over to his desk, and he vetoed it. Mm-hmm. And he vetoed it because he thought it was too broad, it wasn't specific enough, and it would be too highly challenged in court. So he kind of sent it back to the legislature and said, hey, fix this, and gave him a little bit of guidance, which they did fix, and then he signed it into law. Mm-hmm. Basically, what he is saying is he's putting age groups into restriction boundaries on social media. You probably know a little bit more about it than I do, since I don't have any young kids. But I think it was crafted such that the control is really at the parent level and at the social media level. Did I get that right?
Yeah, you actually did. And he vetoed the first one. I mean, things did change in there, but I think the most extensive change was they dropped the 16, anybody under 16 to the age of 14. And so essentially, anybody who is under the age of 14, they cannot utilize social media, even with parents' permission at this point in time. I mean, so I think that's extremely, it's hard for me to get behind. I mean, I think that if anything, parents have to parent first and foremost. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, the fact that I'm still not certain because they said they might repeal part of it. But, you know, these individuals, if they've been on social media, you know, that are under 14, they're going to have to delete those accounts as it stands right now. But they might allow them, since they were already on, to keep them. But, you know, Denise, to me, so your First Amendment right knows no age. I mean, I'll be straight up honest with you. It does not know any age. And this coming, you know, behind or coming out from DeSantis was really shocking to me because he's a freedom fighter. And he's a very good governor. I mean, I'm not from Florida like you guys are, but, you know, realistically, I like the guy. And I think he has a real shot at winning president in the future if he doesn't allow what he, you know, not getting out of the race and things of that nature and to kind of, I guess, ruin his career, derail, you know, what the progress he could have done. But, you know, specifically, this one was very surprising because, again, you know, you have individuals who they're 2 years away from, you know, driving a vehicle, or in some states, 1 year away from driving a vehicle. And, you know, they're already starting to make decisions on college at 14. You know, for you to state that these individuals are not mature enough to utilize social media, you know, something is wrong. Now, if you want to teach and, you know, educate and get a spread awareness on addiction to these types of applications, and also in schools, what, you know, utilizing social media in the wrong manner could happen. You know, if you share a picture or something that's of a compromising situation, you know, it could ruin your pretty much your entire career, your life in the future. You know, you could bring up the fact that Snapchat and those other places, they have nothing but predators. So it really, to me, it could be done a different way, and that would be educating. And that would be spreading awareness. And that would also be allowing the parents to actually sign off on a waiver within these social media apps stating, hey, I promise you I will watch my kid. Because mm-hmm. the parents in this aspect, Denise, they're going to be, just think about this. You know, I did a show last week when this came out, and, you know, people were surprised that YouTube is a social media platform. And I'm like, yes, it is. It's 100% social media. You know, now you'll probably get people try to change their, you know, how they're, you know, specifically set up or how they're designated. But YouTube, you know, they have YouTube Kids. And just like when we made Realster, we made a kids version. So, you know, they would not be getting, you know, the filth and things you would see on the TikTok and aspects of that nature. But, you know, it's something to me because, you know, I have a 3 and 7 year old that we've discussed before on the show. And, you know, well, they're not mine by blood, but they're still mine, of course. But, you know, their mom, she always allows them to watch videos, you know, on YouTube Kids with, you know, the educational programs and things that they actually like. And now they're not going to be able to do that in Florida. It's really unbelievable to me.
So help me, if you would, with what pressure. I don't know if that's going to be the right word. I know that you'll fix that word for me. that he is putting on the actual social media companies, because some of the things that social media companies are allowing are really outrageous. And you mentioned YouTube and Snapchat, but I think that it goes beyond that. I mean, we've got a situation here, I think, Jason, where they're actually, you can buy narcotics, there's trafficking, you know, so I think there needs to be, it's almost like he's trying to set a template for what the federal government should be doing with these social media companies. Help me with that one.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think there is a lot of good with this, you know, and I could probably get behind something maybe even, you know, under 10 years old. I mean, it's so hard to put an age on this because people, you know, their children's maturity level is different. You know, it's just depends on also their upbringing. But so there is a lot going on. You're 100% right. And this is where I think this is why it's going to be almost impossible to enforce this. I mean, so me as a social media company with Wimkin, you know, we have 9 million people, but we don't have many, if any, minors on our platform because no one's interested in politics. So that's actually kind of a blessing for us if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when it comes down to the Twitters and the X's, which they have enough money, of course, to deal with this. But, you know, anybody who doesn't vet their individuals and, you know, they get caught, let's say a 13-year-old goes on there and they lie about their age. Well, we have to come up as developers to figure out a way for that not to happen.
Right.
And if we don't, we get a $50,000 fine per instance, and we also $10,000 to the child that was doing this. So don't you think there would be a whole bunch of smart 12 and 13-year-olds out there trying to figure out how to make $10,000? I mean, I'm telling you, this is going to get so bad. I mean, I don't think people thought this through. And then let's be honest, Denise, realistically now, you're going to slap some parents in the face saying, wait a minute, you're calling my kid a bad kid at 13 years old, and you don't think that I can manage my kid because you don't want them to utilize a social media application. I'm pretty sure that I can manage that. That's one. But two, when it comes down to it is, you know, how many individuals are still forced in the home because of COVID to work? Now, if summertime comes around, these kids just want to sit and watch videos, don't they? They want to play on social media. So now the babysitter aspect goes away. I mean, it is something that really people didn't think through, I think, when they put this bill together. And I think it's going to have so much pushback from parents. There are good things. There's always good and bad in every situation. There's just, in my opinion, a better way to do this. And that's just education. That's waivers. I mean, we can get as specific as, you know, hey, putting a waiver in there that you sign. Now, obviously, a kid can sign that as their parent. There's no doubt about that. If you were going into a position where they required ID, they can also get that ID and upload that ID. I mean, kids are very smart. There's no doubt about that. But when it comes down to it, you know, you're not going to be able to enforce this. And what happens when a parent says, I don't care. I don't, my kid's still going to use this. There's going to be millions of people that say that. Are they going to go to jail?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is, it makes no sense. I don't know what they were thinking, but, it's the world we live in right now. I mean, Denise, we do a show probably about once a month, it seems. And each time I go on your show, I'm like, it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse as we roll up to 2000, to November. And sure enough, that is certainly happening. And, you know, with the TikTok aspect, the bipartisanship of what we've seen there, when Trump said, I don't want TikTok in this country, everybody on the left said, oh my God, you are nuts. We're going to keep TikTok, you know. And now, you know, you have legitimately almost, 75% bipartisan support on that. So to me, Denise, when you see things like this, and even with coming from DeSantis, it seems like they want to grab more control on every aspect. And that's when I get really scared.
So, you know, we had these hearings on the Hill, and it's kind of a free-for-all with what these social media companies are doing, including YouTube, Snapchat, Instagram. And, you know, every time, it seems like every time somebody signs on to Facebook, they've got some new procedure algorithm, you know, a double sign-in, you know, procedure and this kind of thing. And I'm not sure I know what it is that they're trying to fix there. But I think some of the things that need to be fixed, they're not fixing. What say you?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I mean, we've had this conversation too about privacy on Facebook and Meta, you know, as a whole. And, you know, when you had the hearing and Zuckerberg stood up and he apologized to families that, you know, their kids were bullied or worse, that, you know, ended up hurting themselves or actually taking their own lives. And in that same hearing, you know, Mark Zuckerberg states, I don't know how many people, when we put up that warning about this could contain, you know, graphic content, or this could, you know, this could contain graphic content with minors, he couldn't tell them how many times or what the statistics were of how many people actually said, I don't care, I'd like to see this. But he can, you and I are talking about this right now. Let's talk about TVs, okay? I guarantee you, when you and I hang up and we go to our Facebook, you're going to see ads for TVs there. So if they can do that, they can do anything that they want to. And, you know, as far as these new things they keep doing, I think it's just different ways to intrude on your privacy. I mean, when you sign up for Facebook, every single time they ask for your content, your contacts, you know, I have probably 1,500 contacts in my phone. If I were to hit yes, that gives Facebook the right to spam every single one of them. So that's, you know, those are the things that I don't think people really know. And that's why they gain so much power. You know, they really did. They have everyone's information. So, you know, anything they're doing and trying to change in logins and things, it's, they're trying to get more information from you, plain and simple.
Is there anything in the new Florida DeSantis law that you do like, that you do agree with?
I mean, so 100%, I'm for kids being safe on social media. And I do believe that, you know, there's some apps that are very addictive, you know, TikTok being one. And obviously, again, going back to that, with the algorithm and things and what they're actually showing children, absolutely, that needs to be looked at. They're going to do that, obviously, on the federal level. But, you know, with DeSantis, I understand where he's coming from. And I do believe that it's going to have a positive effect, you know, in the long run. But it is encroaching on, you know, 14-year-olds, 13-year-olds, you know, First Amendment rights. And, you know, the first one was for anybody under 16. You know, how could you, at 16, I believe now you can actually enlist in the military. So if they're saying you are, you know, 2 years away from being able to vote, you can enlist in the military, you can drive a vehicle, but you can't be on social media. Like, this isn't about age. I understand, again, that...
Yeah, not all probably, 16-year-olds are equal, for sure.
Yeah, you aren't kidding. But when it comes down to it, I would imagine a lot of 13, 12, 11-year-olds don't know what their First Amendment rights are, but that doesn't mean they don't have them. So it's something that... This is going to be a heck of a debate. Net Choice is already going after them for the First Amendment. And, I know Meta is going to follow suit. X is going to follow suit with Musk. And I think Wimkin, I think we're going to file a friend of the court brief in this and state, even though we don't really have any minors, we still believe that this is not a good thing for really anybody. So I think we are going to throw our hat in the ring with this one. But, it's something, again, we went from censorship now saying to you can't use this. So it's not getting better in my mind.
I think you and I have discussed this before, Jason Shepherd, and that is give a rating. You mentioned, TV shows and or movies, and they have a rating, G for general audiences, and then they go on up to X and up so forth. For adult content, whatever that is. Yeah. So is that some kind of a solution or part of a planned solution for things that are on social media, is to give them which would take some amazing algorithms to necessarily do.
Yeah, you aren't kidding there. So, now, if anything, I think a rating system for the app, like let's say you go see a movie, I think they're G, PG, PG-13.
Right.
R, and not really, I think there's one called NC-17, which I'm not sure what that means, but, if you were able to do that with these platforms, it's still really, there's really no way to keep the people off, it's an IP address that connects to you, plain and simple, it's an email somebody gives or a phone number somebody gives. So for them to do something like that, I completely understand it. Now with Realster, when we made that, we have to rebuild the whole thing now because of this law. We had age groups of 3 to 8, 9 to 12, 13 to 17, and 18 plus for, kids and teenagers to get the content that they wanted that was not going to, in our opinion, hurt them in any way, shape, or form. If you could do something like that on every single app, yes. But, then you're talking about developers having to pay incredible amounts of money to get it done. And it's just, I really don't think that politicians think too much about these things. Again, in general, it's a great idea to keep kids getting addicted to social media. It really is. But I think, again, going through education, telling people how to be safe on there, educating the parents about what can happen, I think that's just better. And I don't know of any system that can be done right now to actually prove somebody's not a minor. It's pretty hard.
How do you educate parents? Do you send notes home? Now I think that they've got these portals where parents can sign in to the schools and, get memos and letters that need to go home to them. Parents, I think, in a lot of cases, just don't get it or have the time to go get it or necessarily have the interest. Mm-hmm. But I think you need to teach, just like you said, I think there's more teaching that needs to happen at the adult level than there is at the adolescent level. Yes.
Yeah. I really do believe so because, a lot of these adults, most of them, to be honest with you, never experienced social media like their children have on at least on that level. Mm-hmm. Their TikTok wasn't around. Facebook, I don't even know, depending on how old they are, Facebook probably wasn't really even around yet, depending on, again, how old the children are or how old the parents are. But, MySpace was really our only experience with social media. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, when we come back to it, because I've never used TikTok. We were going to use it for promoting Wimkin, but, I didn't like it. And so we didn't utilize that. But, we do use Facebook and things, and I think most people do, to have over 3 billion people. So, but this, the new apps that these kids are on, they're not specifically like a Facebook. Facebook is relatively safe as long as your kid's not getting into something and, answering messages from people that they don't know, or obviously sending pictures and things of themselves or setting up meetings. That's where the education comes down to. I think most parents do know those things. At least I hope so. Don't don't let a stranger approach you, you know, don't get into anybody's car. Like, these are just givens. So you can just take that over to social media and say, don't answer anybody's messages you don't know. You know, don't schedule any meetings. Never once send a picture of yourself, ever. And, you know, that's really where you can start this from and keep it safe. But, you know, there's some, let's be honest, there's some very, very bad parents out there that just don't care.
Well, you said pictures. You know, I know somebody in Atlanta, and she and her husband are very involved with their kids and their grandkids. And every day mm-hmm. there's hundreds and hundreds of pictures of what their grandkids are doing and what they were doing all weekend long and this and that. I'm mm-hmm. thinking to myself, you know, I don't want to pry in other people's business, but I feel like I just want to tell her, would you stop doing that? Because we have two things here. We have artificial intelligence and we have something known as deep fakes. And mm-hmm. you want to put luck in your favor, but you're diminishing your inventory of luck or probability of luck when you know, overexpose yourself on social media. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I've had individual friends and things, because I mean, I've worked in this for a while. I've also worked in internet security before this. And, you know, I always told my friends, like, do not, if you're on the beach and you have kids and pictures like of them in bathing suits and things of that nature, don't share those. Don't put them online, first and foremost, for many different reasons, because at some point in time, someone's going to screen or right click that, take it, and then send it and sell it to somebody, most likely. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. That stuff really mm-hmm. happens. I said, so you don't mm-hmm. want to do that, first and foremost. And now you're right, 100% with the AI aspect. We did a segment on that, you and I, Denise, and I brought up the girl who, they just, from her voicemail on her phone, you know, hey, this is Courtney, can't get to the call, whatever she said there. In that little bit of time, you know, they were able to spoof her voice, contact the parents with that spoofed voice and mm-hmm. state that they kidnapped her and they asked for a ransom. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, we are at a point in time, it's so pivotal that people really need to understand, they have to use common sense. You know, all these, even these posts that you see out there right now, Denise, like, where you play the game of I've done this. What was your pet's first name? You know,
right.
Or first pet's name. That's where they get your information from.
Right.
I mean, so it, you know, these people need to realize not to do those things, but it's, I mean, I see them every single day on my feed and I'm just like, oh God, there's no hope.
I do too. There's people I want to go kick them in the shins and tell them, stop doing that.
Yeah.
You know, lost pets. There's a lot of scams in that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you'll see even nowadays, one of the new ones is, you know, they'll get a photo to go viral of a supposedly a missing person or a missing child, and then they'll just change that picture to an ad after it's been shared like 3 million times. You know, so there's so much that they do now. It's really a dirty place. That's why I understand what DeSantis is trying to do. I just think 14 isn't the way. I think if you could, you know, put that back to maybe under 12 at least, that would make a lot more sense to me. I think it would make a lot more sense to parents. But yeah, I mean, you know me in the First Amendment. It's a tough one. It really is.
Well,
you know,
it is
I wanna
a tough
protect...
one. And
yeah.
You know, like you, I clearly understand where he's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I would almost, and maybe this is happening, because he doesn't get terribly involved in down to the city, county, mayor level. He lets, you know, those politicians govern their territories. But I would necessarily say that maybe you end up having something just for those age groups. You know, Nickelodeon was obviously... or, you know, cartoons and those kinds of things are specific to certain age groups.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a social media platform? It's just for teenagers. You know, do we do that?
You know what? I'm sure there is something out there. You know, we, again, with Realster, we wanted to do age groups. And now we can't in Florida. So we have to literally rebuild the app at this point in time. But, you know, I think that's a great idea. I think that's one of the ways to mitigate it, because everybody on there knows specifically, hey, these are children, you can have people moderate that. And then the behaviors of individuals who come onto the platform that aren't acting like teenagers and that are asking for, you know, predatory pictures and things of that nature, that will be easily picked out because you know who's there. And that's a great idea. I mean, to be honest with you, I don't know of anybody who's out there spending the money and the time to build something specifically for teenagers. But, you know, like I did say, you have YouTube Kids, you have different applications right now that I'm anxious to see what happens in Florida with them, because they are social media and YouTube Kids is for YouTube Kids. I mean, it's for children. So, that as of right now, I understand is banned in Florida. So, it's just a crazy one, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, some of the schools are saying now that you can't have your phone. I mean, you can take your phone to the school, but you can't have them in the classrooms. You kind of like to have to check them in. And I think Florida is one of those, or certain areas of Florida are. And the students seem to be very appreciative. It kind of almost puts the pressure, takes the pressure off of them. You know, they don't have to respond, or they don't have to, it's not distracting, and it's not, it quits affecting their attention span in the classroom, yeah, or whatever class that they're in. So I think there's some good that's coming of that. But I still don't think that fully state legislatures, much less both houses of Congress, understand what is really happening out here in social media. Do you?
I would totally agree with you. I mean, 100%, Denise. You know, I wish I could sit here and tell you, you know, in 30 minutes that you can do this, 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 and this, but you can't. You know, there's a ripple effect almost everything that we're doing right now. But, you know, as far as the phones in school, I think I'm 43, so I think I was just at that age when cell phones were starting to come out, like in maybe sixth grade, seventh grade, something like that. And we weren't allowed to have them. And we didn't, there was not smartphones, there wasn't anything, but, you know, we weren't allowed to have them just because they would be disruptive. And first and foremost, it was pagers or beepers. If you
I remember going through so many pagers with my kids, and then we graduated to Nextel phones because they love that whole flip thing and close it like that.
I mean, let's be honest here. Like, if you wanted to get straight A's and you had a phone and the teacher wasn't paying attention, you could cheat on everything. So
absolutely,
I already thought that phones weren't allowed in class, at least. But, you know, I again, having a 3 and 7 year old, I told you, that when Rocky, he's 7 now, but on his first day of kindergarten, they asked him how he identified. So this is where we are. And this is a very conservative area too. So I had to go visit the school and say, what the heck was that all about? But, you know, we're at this point now where nothing honestly is going to make sense to some of us. And we're at the point where parents just don't care. They're too busy or something, you know, to really get involved in their kids' lives in terms of electronics. See, they see them at home and they see they're safe, but technically sometimes they're not, because they have that person on that other side of the, you know, the social media aspect, or they have that person that's bullying them, that's making them, you know, want to harm themselves. Or they have that person that's trying to seriously do something to them sexually. It's crazy to think about, you know, but when that's why you do have to understand and know what's going on in your kid's social media 100%. But banning them, anybody under 14, tough one.
Real quickly, I find some of these apps that you can download on your phone, whether you pay for them or they're free, they can be pretty dangerous themselves, correct? I mean, we're talking about posts on social media, but some of these apps themselves are pretty twisted. Have you seen some of that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you could even take this a little bit of a step further, because these are categorized as social apps. But, you know, when you have phone number spoofs and things of that nature, these second line, third line numbers and things, they are there. They are designed to do no good. They're not there to be a convenience, you know. Yeah. So yeah, and I think that's also where these app stores should make a stand and say, hey, these shouldn't be in there. Apple would be able to take a lot of that away, because they don't allow side loading on apps, but Android, there's not much you could do.
Jason Shepherd, thanks for marching on this one and you know, studying it carefully, and we'll watch this thing together, I guess, in the DeSantis social media bill.
So, yeah, we'll see.
We could be having the same conversation 6 months or a year from now, but there's still work to be done. So, Jason Shepherd, Wimkin, thanks so much for staying in the fight and sharing some time with us. Ladies and gentlemen, there's more coming your way on the Denise Simon Experience. Stay with us.
the conversation starter. This is Talk 92.1 WDDQ 8L Valdosta.